today. Is Kathy Taylor. So Kathy Taylor's been practicing speech pathologist for over 25 years and is a senior speech pathologist at the War Memorial Hospital in Waverley. She's published and presented on primary progressive aphasia both internationally and in Australia and approaches this emerging field of practice as both a researcher and a clinician. She's here with her talk, Taking First Steps.
Just be careful I don't fall as I sit. And this is a bit of a shift away from mobility and physical to intellectual, and so I hope it'll be of interest to everyone, but this is something that I'm sure we're all going to see in our clinical practice. So my colleagues on this presentation are Dr. Karen Crute from Sydney University and Professor Lindsay Nichols from Macquarie. And I'm going to describe clinical and research innovations that we have been and are currently involved in the field of primary progressive aphasia. Measures that are leading to a management pathway for PPA in speech pathology. And I'll work on the premise that no one knows what it is, and I apologise to those that do. Primary progressive aphasia is what it is. The name explains the clinical syndrome. The main clinical feature, the primary feature, is language impairment, aphasia, and that language impairment deteriorates. It's progressive. It's gradual. It's a progressive condition. So PPA is a clinical syndrome in which degeneration of language regions in the dominant hemisphere is associated with deficits in speech and language function, but in the absence of impairment of other cognitive domains. And that's the key issue to keep in mind. But not all apples are apples, or not all tomatoes are tomatoes. There's different types. Based on the linguistic and cognitive features of PPA, it can be classified into three different variants. There's a non-fluent variant, there's a semantic variant, and a logopenic variant, PPA. And each variant has different speech and language features, different distribution of atrophy in the brain, and different likelihoods of underlying pathology. So, progressive deterioration of a single cognitive domain is not our usual experience. And some may ask, why be interested in language impairments that are part of a degenerative process? These aphasias, by definition, have symptoms that worsen over time. But that doesn't lessen the profound effect upon the individual and their families and close others. As a community, we do not question the availability and the appropriateness of providing resources and services and interventions to adults who lose their or sustain an impairment to their speech and language suddenly, as in a stroke or a trauma, or even surgery or infection. But these same values are not always applied to adults whose speech and language impairment is in the result of a neurodegenerative condition, even in this case where it's in isolation from other cognitive decline. But what sort of management decisions do we make if improvement is not a reasonable goal? These are some of the questions. There's lots of research in this field, quite recent research, quite strong research, that says that individuals with PPA have preserved insight, reasoning, cognitive flexibility and ability to learn. So our question is, what as speech pathologists, what management pathway will we follow for this newly emerging field of practice? In 2004, and five, my colleague Rachel Miles and I actually surveyed service provision for this client group, and I think it's still the only such survey that's ever been done. And what prompted us to do that was an increase in referrals to our service at War Memorial. So we talked to 34 speech pathologists across rural and metropolitan regions of New South Wales, and we asked what they'd seen and what they'd done between 2004 and 2005, and we got a pretty good reply rate. Now, there were two main sort of outcomes from this survey. Firstly, that individuals with PPA are vastly, or at that time were vastly, under-referred to speech pathology services. 50% of respondents across the state had had not one single referral. But also, those speech pathologists that did receive referrals, they provided appropriate service, assessment, education, care, information to carers, some treatment, some support, review. But they really questioned the appropriateness of the service they were providing. They weren't sure what was the right thing to do, and they were asking for more information and more resources, both for themselves and their clinical practice, but also for their patients and their families. So a clear need for a management pathway was expressed by speech pathologists in New South Wales. And so I'll describe a combination of research and clinical innovations now that have been started and implemented to both address the need for an evidence base and provide services for these individuals. Now, first of all, I was lucky enough to be funded by Alzheimer's Australia to go and visit centres of excellence in the United States and see what was being done there. And that's the very eminent Professor Sandra Weintraub at Northwestern University, and that was an amazing learning experience. Next, we thoroughly analysed the current literature, and we wrote two articles for peer-reviewed speech pathology journals, one on assessment and one on evidence for intervention. There is level 4 evidence for word retrieval interventions. Studies of impairment remediation-focused interventions have, however, been largely single case studies or very small cohorts, and they have not demonstrated generalisation to untreated items or transfer to connected speech. So this then led to our group setting about collecting that evidence. And we wanted to do a word relearning study. Word finding difficulty is a common clinical feature across all the different types of PPA. So we were lucky enough again to get an Alzheimer's Australia research grant, and we are asking, does treatment that improves word retrieval in aphasia caused by stroke improve word retrieval in progressive aphasia? And we're also asking, does treatment improve word retrieval in connected speech as well as just picture naming? Now, where am I? So with a much larger cohort of 12 participants, and for research in this area that is a larger cohort, we're hoping to see better picture naming for treated items than untreated items, and we don't expect generalisation to untreated items, but we're hoping to see transfer to connected speech. And the way it works is these patients have a finite period of time where their aphasia is in isolation of the cognitive decline. So they've got a window of time. So words chosen have to be functionally relevant, and so we do that in collaboration with the patient and their partner, and they choose what words they want to relearn. Each participant has a different group of words. Half the items in one topic are treated, and then the untreated words from that treated topic and all the words from an untreated topic serve as the controls. The therapy task is a repetition and reading in the presence of a picture task, and they practice that at home on a laptop intensively 10 days over 2 weeks. our baseline measures are, we take three baselines and two post-test measures of naming, and it's pretty much real-life photographs of the items they've selected, and word retrieval in connected speech around a structured conversation. It's very hard to measure words in conversation because, as you know yourself, every time you speak about something different and use different words. So far we've completed two participants, and I'll just quickly tell you about them. The first is an 80-year-old man with the progressive non-fluent variant aphasia, and the second is a 54-year-old woman with the logopenic variant. They both have good comprehension, good repetition, but poor spontaneous speech. And the non-fluent man's speech is very effortful and halting with impaired word retrieval, and the logopenic lady's is fluent and grammatical, but again with impaired word retrieval. This is the timeline of what they go through: pre-test, three baselines, the treatment, and then the post-test. And I'll just show you these results of these first two. As you can see, the red dots and lines are the treated items. So we've got the three baselines, and then the patient goes away and does the treatment at home, and we've got that lovely big dramatic significant difference in their ability to name those items. It drops off a little bit after treatment, but that's still a very good outcome. When we look at the words in connected speech, there's a trend to an improvement, but that's not significant, unfortunately. The same with the lady, COH. The red line shoots up beautifully, and I haven't got it on the slide because it was not ready at the time, but we've got the exact same effect that the second post-treatment baseline measure is just a slight drop-off. But again, not a nice, strong demonstration of transfer to connected speech. And, you know, it's why is that so? Why aren't we seeing evidence of transfer to connected speech? Is it some unknown factor with these individuals? Or are we not training the right words? Is it the wrong dose? Do we need to treat for longer? Or does it just not transfer? We hope with these next eight participants that we'll be able to answer those questions. So, as predicted, we saw the treated words improve, but no generalisation to untreated words, and unfortunately at this stage, no generalisation in connected speech. Just quickly, other initiatives that we've undertaken is that now PPA is included as a module in training at undergraduate and GEM level speech pathology students, and we've delivered a lot of continuing professional development to speech pathologists in this area and across Sydney and New South Wales. One important development is that on meeting these patients and their family, it readily becomes apparent that education and support and activity facilitation participation type active programs that are for stroke or dementia are not suitable for them. So in response to that, at War Memorial, I now run a communication and support group for people with PPA once a month. And then because my clients are spread far and wide and they can't all come to War Memorial, there's a newsletter that I put out two or three times a year for them and their families. And there's copies of past editions out on the resource table. So finally, we've taken the first steps to developing a pathway for PPA. The initial results from our AAR study and current international literature indicate that impairment-directed interventions do have a positive effect in early stages of the disease progression. The quality of initiatives implemented in our clinical practice indicate that activity participation facilitation directed interventions and education to patients and their significant others has a positive effect in early to mid stages of disease. And there's lots more to be done, and I hope this is just the beginning. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Well, we've been moving forward. Actually, it's actually surprising. A lot of patients now do have computers at home, but we've been fortunate through the funding through Alzheimer's Australia. We have a little pool of Apple Mac laptops. We load their treatment onto it and we lend it to them for, well, in the long run, we lend them to them for much longer than just that 2 weeks. So, and in some ways it's better to have that, the one that's their therapy, even if they have a computer at home, it's better that this one is their therapy one and they just sit down and do it every day, sort of becomes part of their routine, right there on the screen, on the desktop. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm a bit lost. The PPA, is that part of a bigger dementia brain atrophy or picture of that nature, or is it a separate diagnostic group by itself?
It's one of the atypical dementias, and it's asymmetrical closest. So in PPA, the atrophy is in the dominant hemisphere only, and usually, I mean, there's variations.
Is it part of the bigger picture, like?
It's the pathology is frequently frontotemporal node dementia, or it can sometimes be an atypical Alzheimer's. But unlike other dementia syndromes, it's not a nice symmetrical spread. It's focused and asymmetrical. Thank you.